I'm Steve Potter. This is Cityscape, and here are some of the stories that our newsroom is following today. St. Louis aldermen will meet this afternoon for a final vote on whether to raise the city's minimum wage. The board, earlier this week, gave tentative approval to a bill that would increase the hourly wage in St. Louis to $11 by 2018. And new federal rules to protect smaller streams, tributaries, and wetlands took effect today, but only in some states. A federal court ruling yesterday, hours before the rules were to go into effect, blocked the regulations in 13 states, including Missouri. Those states had sued the EPA and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, arguing that the rules are federal overreach and could be costly and confusing for landowners. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Well, when you hear nervous laughter, it's usually a situation where the one laughing is uncomfortable on some level. At Gallery 210 at the University of Missouri St. Louis, an exhibition opens tomorrow. It's called Exposure 18, Nervous Laughter. Terry Suri is Gallery 210's director. Hi, Terry. Good to see you.
Good to see you, Steve.
Also here are Deborah Alma Wheeler and Brett Williams. They're two of the three artists whose work is featured. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Terry, what usually happens before we laugh nervously?
Almost always you've encountered something that puts you at in a sense of unease. You're not exactly certain what the appropriate response is. You feel like you're being judged. Are you judging? And to kind of transition that way from this uncomfortable situation to a more comfortable situation, you kind of laugh your way through it or laugh it off.
Maybe you don't know how to react.
Well, it is. Some situations can be emotionally and intellectually overwhelming. And if you feel out of sorts, sometimes that is your way to get past that discomfort.
Well, I don't know, Deborah Alma Wheeler, should we be nervous about your art?
I don't think so.
No, but I mean the rest of us.
Maybe. Maybe.
Uncomfortable on some level? I mean, is that what you want?
A certain level of uncomfortableness. I would like more, I think it's more thought-provoking than anything.
What do you think, Brent? How it applies to you?
Well, with my work, there's a tension, there's a buildup, and some lack of release until you actually see the piece so you can hear it as you're walking into the gallery, and then you see it performing a function, and then you're waiting for it to do something else, but it never really does. Mm-hmm. So
to Terry, I understand that you feel that the work of Brett and Deborah's and Amy Howard, who's the third artist, mm-hmm. they're very different work, but somehow they connect in a certain way. What is that?
I think they connect through a subversive sense that they're undermining previous held notions.
We're going back to subversive.
I'm hanging on that word. And it is a way to confront and offer a alternate point of view about kind of societal norms. And there is a dark humor here that holds them all together. It is a slight elbow in the ribs to let you know, this is serious. This is a difficult idea. These are, awkward situations. And you throw the elbow and say, but only kind of kidding a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I do think also the third thing is that all the artists have a certain working studio practice that employs a wide variety of disparate elements. Even Amy, who's I think a world-class metalsmith, works in somewhat unorthodox combinations of materials outside the metalsmithing tradition. Brett uses mechanical elements and animates his pieces. Deborah uses a lot of found objects and recontextualizes them. I think I need to stress that both Brett and Deborah are excellent craftspersons as well.
Well, Deborah, describe your art, not a particular piece, but just in general. Describe your art to us.
For this show, I mainly concentrated on homosexual guilt or a gay shame in the wake of all the pride and the marriage equality. I decided to go back to those key roots that I was still struggling with or currently struggling with, mostly between Christianity and homosexuality. So I'm not pointing a finger at one religion as much as I am the whole gamut of religion.
You're pointing your finger at everyone.
Yeah, kind of. A little bit, yeah. I guess.
Brett, what's your work like?
They're kinetic sculptures that employ like a Rube Goldberg device to them. They're very intricate but simple. So,
you're both described as sculptors, but let's be clear, you're not modeling things out of clay. It's not that kind of sculptor.
No. I use wood and electronics and metal.
Yeah, I do model out of clay, foam.
Oh, you do?
Cardboard, wood, stone, rubber mostly.
Terry, tell me about Amy Howard's work.
Amy is a metalsmith, and she works in very traditional metalsmithing techniques. Incredible attention to detail. They're exquisite finishes. But her idea deals with the medical treatments and how they are slowly and surely replacing religious ideas of immortality and the extension of life. She has built these devices that are on the wall, and they are Victorian-looking devices set next to a book that's open with illustrations. The illustrations show something like a clenched fist syndrome, and then there's this device that you use to insert into your wrist to pry it open. She also has another set of more recent work called reliquaries, and the reliquaries deal directly with the attempt to be immortal. You know, a reliquary was one of those things where the pieces of a saint or something was stored for eternity to inspire followers and believers. In her reliquary, she's going to be putting small references to contemporary medical science in there. And you will open these up and see things like, you know, maybe a small stethoscope, a small hemostat, just to have us be aware that, you know, there are limits to what life can do. And just because we can extend life, is it always the best thing to do?
Deborah, I'm looking at an image of one of your pieces, and I would like you to explain it. This one's called Carthesis,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's a school desk, and it looks like it has a rearview mirror, the kind you might find on the side of a pickup truck or something on the side of it. So would you describe it to us and just talk about what it means to you?
For me, it was mostly about watching your back and about being that minority in the classroom. It could be related to many different things. It could be related to race, culture, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender, you know. It could be taken many different ways. I've heard one person say that, you know, it was the cute boy behind her she wanted to look at. That's why she liked the piece, but it's really not what it's about.
Well, obviously, this really speaks to you.
Yes.
How big a problem was that for you?
To face? Or
To be the kid looking in that rearview mirror all the time.
Yeah, growing up in a small farming town in Illinois across the river from St. Louis, yeah, it was rough. I had good experiences and bad experiences, but I think that overall it was a very eye-opening experience, and it's given me the base from which to create my work.
Brett Williams, I'm looking at a piece of yours, and I'm not sure the name of it.
Consonants and Dissonance.
Yes, there you go. I'm having a hard time reading that.
That's okay.
But it looks like a metal piece of metal on a stand. It almost looks like a medical equipment, but what is it?
Well, it's a kinetic sculpture. It looks like a hangman's noose hanging down. It's a microphone that rotates on a metal on a motor, and it keeps 4/4 time, and it is amplified sound that comes from the microphone banging on the homemade cymbals and comes out through an amplifier, a guitar amplifier.
Mm-hmm. So, Terry, how are the pieces in this show displayed at Gallery 210? What's the experience like when you walk through and see all of it together?
It's really rich because the artists all are so different in their studio practices. The first thing you see when you walk in is Deborah's wedding cake, mm-hmm. which is a beautiful crafted cake with two figurines kissing on the top of the cake. And then just behind the wall, you see Brett, and you will hear Brett before you see Brett's piece in action. And it is quite dramatic. We have beautiful spotlights on it. Brett directed the lighting, and it'll have this animated form. It's going to be trailing this microphone around as it dances and bangs on things. If you turn to your left, then you're going to see Deborah's installation. And we have a number of things. We have the drinking fountain. We have the dispenser. We have the wheel. What's a better name for with a wheel?
It's called Choice or Chosen.
Choice or Chosen.
It's a weighted carnival wheel that the audience will spin, and then it's weighted so that you always come up homosexual. But
yeah.
It's either heterosexual or homosexual, and you always win homosexual. Yeah. So,
and let's see what else is in there.
There's a bed.
There's the bed.
The bed installation.
Yeah.
And the standing figure in the corner.
That's it. Yeah.
Modeled after timeout dolls.
Yeah. What kind of dolls are those?
They're timeout dolls. It's like Midwestern craft. You find them in mostly older people's homes, elderly homes. It's like that little child in the corner, uh-huh. and it's made out of cloth and fabric. But I made a life-size one, so it's a life-size adult tomboy standing in the corner, and it's called I Suffer from Same-Sex Attraction.
The face is in the corner.
Yeah.
And every time I walk by the gallery, I think of somebody else in there. I have to –
It does make you jump a little.
It kind of creeps out the whole staff right now. We'll get used to it.
I think that's her intention.
Oh, it works well. And then Amy has on a group of shelves, she has her – medical devices displayed with the books. And then there's two pedestals with her reliquaries in place.
Well, explain to me how you set this up or how it all works, because it seems like all your different artwork plays off one another in some way. So is that designed ahead of time? Do you all work together to make that happen, or does it just all come together and it just happens to happen? It happens to work that way, or
no? we had a couple of meetings and we visited the space and talked about the work. Since I don't always know exactly what's coming into the exhibition space, we need to have the space carved out, you know, appropriately so everybody feels equally represented, and that there's integration and a flow of ideas can move through it. You're not kind of just jerking from one thing to the next. So that is carefully planned out. And I guess, you know, when you work with professional artists, these guys are terrific. They were very generous and accommodating with each other's needs.
Let's just find out a little bit about the both of you. Deborah, you already said you grew up in a small town on the east side somewhere.
I did.
Where the cornfields are.
Right.
I think you have your degree from SIUE.
I do, but I've lived other places. At 18, I moved to Idaho, and I went to a religious college, Brigham Young University out there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I went on a two-year mission. Well, it turned out to be about a year. Mission for the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
I think it's interesting where you have some of your pieces. Tom of Finland's Tom House, which is located in West Hollywood.
Yes.
And the Kinsey Institute for Research in Sex, Gender, and Reproduction. That's in Bloomington, Indiana.
Yes.
Also, you had your work a couple of years ago in Dublin, a Lesbian Lives exhibition of some sort?
It was a conference I spoke at, yes, and exhibited.
And also the Erotic Gender and Sexuality Conference at the University of Oxford. I see a pattern here.
Yes, yeah. academics love my work. I love my work.
Uh-huh. Brett, you're not from this area. Although you've had work like at the Contemporary Art Museum, Bruno David Gallery, Luminary, places like that. But what's your background?
I was born in California. I moved here at a young age and lived in North County for most of my teenage years. And then most of my adult life, I've lived here in South City.
Uh-huh.
Well,
this exhibition, Exposure 18 Nervous Laughter, is going to open tomorrow, running through October the 3rd. Now, Gallery 210 is at right there by the Two Hill Metrolink stop.
That's
I guess
right.
Is a pretty good way to do it. And it's going to run through October the 3rd. And you're doing panel discussions and things?
Yes, at 4 o'clock tomorrow, we're going to have a panel discussion with Brett, Deb, and Amy. Everybody's invited to come and participate. We're going to talk about the work, talk about the ideas that generate the work. Audience is invited to ask questions and participate as much as possible. It's all free. And immediately following the panel discussion, there'll be a reception for the artists, and the audience will have a chance to go one-on-one with our folks.
Gallery 210 at UMSL presents Exposure 18, Nervous Laughter, running through October the 3rd. If you'd like more information about details of that, go to our website, stlpublicradio.org/cityscape. This exhibition features the work of our guests, Brett Williams and Deborah Alma Wheeler. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And also the work of Amy Howard. We don't want to forget her. And thanks all for being here. And it looks like it's going to be fascinating.
Well, thanks a lot, Steve. Hope you can see it.
Thank you.
And we have this final note. On June 5th on this program, we remember the life and legacy of theater director Fontaine Sire, who passed away in Indiana on May the 29th. The public is invited to a celebration of her life and work that will be next Saturday, September the 5th, 1 p.m. at the Regional Arts Commission on Del Mar. You can find details at stlpublicradio.org/cityscape. And when you're there, you can also listen to that June 5th conversation, as well as the last discussion I had with Sire, and that was back in January of 2014. Next week on Cityscape, we're going to talk to Pokey LaFarge about his new CD and his appearance at Lou Fest. We'll also take a look at the Stages St. Louis production of The Full Monty. Then join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air, when he and a panel of legal experts will examine current issues pertaining to the law. Archived versions of past Cityscape programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/cityscape. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Anya O'Connor and Aaron Dorr. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter. Have a great weekend, and I hope you'll join us next week.